welcome into this edition of the Golf Joe Podcast with Rex and Lav. Happy Mother's Day to all of our followers and listeners over on the YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. Rex and I, you are all packed up for the PGA Championship. Looking forward to getting to Aronimink. You'll be getting there very late on Sunday evening. I'll be arriving about midday on Monday, but you and I are both very, very excited for that. But first, we had some business to attend to in Charlotte, where you are, for the Truist Championship. It looked like, Rex, we were going to get a slew of sensational stories, whether it's going to be Alex Fitzpatrick, maybe Ricky Fowler. Instead, it's actually a first-time winner in Christopher Rayton, who emerges on a pretty frenetic final couple hours in the back nine at Quail Hollow. You just talked to him. What's the biggest takeaway here?
Biggest takeaway is, I think this is an indication of what you touched on last week. I think you've said this a couple of times. And the PGA Tour's greatest superpower is creating superstars. And I'm not saying Chris Rayton's going to be a superstar, but if you look at this field, signature event, if you look at what the expectation is at these signature events, it's the top players going head to head. I don't think anybody's putting Chris Rayton in that category up until today. I don't think anybody was sitting around going, man, I really hope he gets into contention on Sunday. This is nothing against Chris. You have to develop yourself into a superstar. And I think this is what the PGA Tour is good at. And it was on full display today. You talked about how sort of back and forth the action was on Sunday. It was exciting because I think at one point we had six people tied for the lead, including Ricky Fowler. And I kind of joked with him afterwards, with Brant Snedeker winning the tour event in Myrtle Beach. I said it felt like 2012 called. And they wanted their golf tournaments back. But between the two of you, it's...
I covered that tournament, Rex. That was one of my first cover stories for Golf Week magazine, is I covered Ricky Fowler's breakout win at Quail Hollow. Remember, he beat DA Points and Roy McIlroy in a playoff. Stuffed it like 4 feet. Very, very exciting. One of my first cover stories.
That's why I was a little concerned about a playoff. It's about like synergy was coming around up until really those last three holes. And look, it's gimmicky. I heard one of the most impressive quotes I think I've ever heard. And I think it was Hunter Mahan who was quoted in a story, and he was asked about this golf course. And he said, you know the quote I'm referring to. He said it's kind of Kim Kardashian of major championship golf, that it's pretty, it's easy on the eyes, it's fun to look at, but it's sort of soulless. And I kind of agree to that to a certain degree. However, I will point to what happened over those last three holes. It was one of those situations where it felt like no one wanted to win. It seems like everybody was just hanging on for dear life. You look at what Alex Fitzpatrick went through, and I actually gave him credit. I did an interview with him this afternoon, and my first question was, how proud are you to rebound after that start? Because he's three over par after three holes. You would have been really easy for someone that's sort of been through the ringer like he has over the last few weeks to sort of mail it in the rest of the way. And he didn't do that. I mean, he was in the mix right up until about the 16th hole. The expectation was he could have done something. Ricky Fowler could have actually done something. He had a really good look at birdie on 17, which you don't get many looks at birdie on, I'm sorry, on 16, you don't get many looks at birdie there. And then he bogeys the 18th hole. You had so many players sort of making a move up the leaderboard, but it was Rayton who ended up closing it out. And even I, it was funny, Ricky stayed in scoring for an extended period of time because he finished up probably close to an hour before the leaders finished up. And he was still in there when Rayton was playing the final hole with a 2-stroke lead. And I go, I get that. I understand that on that closing hole. Like, things can go sideways. So I do appreciate what this tournament creates. I do appreciate what the PGA Tour has created with these signature events. Because, again, I don't know that Chris Rayton would have been on our radar last week, but going into next week, he certainly will be now.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there. That quote in which Kim K got some strays there. It wasn't just a Kim Kardashian quote. It was a Kardashians in general. I think he's referring to the Kris Jenner side as well as the Kim Kardashian side. But yes, it was courtesy of our friend Gabby Herzig of The Athletic. One of the quotes of the year last year, thanks to Hunter Mahan. I don't necessarily disagree. It's a big boy golf course. It's a championship test, and that's about the extent of it. But you're right. A lot can happen. A lot does happen over those final four holes. If you include, actually, I would call it in the last five holes, with the short drivable par four, then you have the par five, and then you have the green mile, which you undoubtedly, if you're playing a drinking game over the weekend, you are somewhere in a coma. I think Chris Rayton is an interesting story, Rex, and you may have butchered my exact phrasing. The PGA Tour regenerates stars. Stars is grossly different than superstars. I don't think any of us are pegging Chris Rayton to be a superstar, but you can have breakout stars. I would argue that Chris Goddard is a breakout star of 2026. You look at what Chris Rayton has done over the past month. He is a candidate, at least, to be a breakout star after winning on the signature event. When you look at him specifically, he's a pretty interesting story. So he's one of those players who got his PGA Tour card via the DP World Tour and one of those 10 available cards. He's had sort of a solid, if unspectacular, 2026 season up until about a month ago at the Zurich Classic, where, just like Alex Fitzpatrick, benefited from playing alongside Matt Fitzpatrick and ended up winning that golf tournament. Chris Rayton was alongside his fellow Norwegian in Chris Ventura. They nearly won the golf tournament, ended up tying for second. That finish then got Rayton into Doral and the Cadillac Championship. Finishes in the top 15 there, earns enough points to just eke into the field at the Truist Championship. All of a sudden, he has the week of his life, and he is now exempt on tour for the next couple of years into the signature events for the rest of the season. Doesn't have to worry about into all the major championships. Doesn't have to worry about any of that. That is the beauty of the signature events. And they have changed in countless ways since they were first introduced back in 2022 as a way to stave off the live golf threat. But I do think, Rex, for as much as they're criticized as sort of being top heavy and just as a method to pay out these guys and no cuts, and you're just trying to get all the best players in the world together, I think this is a prime example of what they can and what they should be about. And again, I know this was a 72-man field. In all likelihood, they're going to 120-man field for the signature events in 2027. You and I both agree that that is a good call. But when you have these opportunities on a difficult golf course against the best players in the world, and it's a deeper field, you can have the stories like Chris Rayton who can significantly alter their career trajectory. And if you're a viewer or if you're just a golf lover, you have to love someone else emerging from that pack. And that's certainly what we had this week in Charlotte.
I'm with you. My mind immediately went to how cool is it going to be when they go to 120 players? Because now you get all of that mix.
To happen.
It does, and it will, and there'll be a cut, because I think that's the conversation that we've had over the last year, that, look, these actually started out called something else. They started out as designated events, and they've evolved, and I think they're going to continue to evolve. But I think 120 players with a cut, it does give an extra element of storytelling to it. If you look at that leaderboard, again, probably not what anyone anticipated. I mean, we were anticipating a Rory McIlroy, and we're going to have that conversation. Scottie Scheffler took this week off, understandably so. Xander Schauffele didn't have all that great a week. Keep going on and on and on. It was the other Fitzpatrick, the one that you probably wouldn't have picked coming in, that had the great week. So I'm with you. I think what these events could become is indicative of what we saw today, where you have this mix of star players with Ricky Fowler and players who are just trying to get their foot in the door, trying to get that breakthrough. I find Chris Rayton interesting because you're right. Up until about a month ago, up until the Zurich, he was having what I would call a middling season. I mean, he was spinning his wheels a little bit. Didn't seem like
there's dozens and dozens of players on the PGA Tour, Rex, just like him, but he had an opportunity and he took advantage of it.
And I think the biggest breakthrough in this week, I mean, the stats on this really blow me away. He made a putter switch this week. And normally we hear this from time to time, and okay, I can see how that happened. But when you look at how dramatic that change was for him this week, going into the final round, he was leading the field in strokes gained putting. He was picking up almost 6 shots. By comparison, to put that into context, he ranks 109th this season on the PGA Tour in strokes gained putting. He's giving away about a quarter shot a round. It was such a dramatic difference in my mind. I kept waiting. The other shoe's going to drop here. Like, eventually he's going to get over a nervy putt. And I asked him specifically when I did my interview with him, that'll be airing on Golf Central tonight, the par putt on 16. It was a fist pump. You didn't see a lot of emotion out of Chris really over these 4 days, but that got a fist pump out of him. And he understood how important that was. That was one of those nervy moments when someone who maybe isn't quite confident about their putts, that's normally when it unravels. I think it's a great story. And I think going forward, we're only going to get more of these at these events.
Yeah, just to button up your point on the putting, 14, 15, and 16. All of those clutch par putts, or one on 14 and 15 were for birdie, just to get ahead and stake his claim to the lead. Incredibly impressive for a guy, again, who had struggled with the flat stick over the course of the 2026 season. One other thing that I wanted to point out, Rex, about the signature events and what the PGA Tour does well. And look, I think these like Next 10 and Swing 5 can be a little bit confusing for fans. Like, when you hear Brian Rolapp, who's coming from the NFL, and he's trying to simplify the PGA Tour model and not having the points and not having the projections and 3x points and 4x points and, you know, the official World Golf ranking and the average points, like, it's all it's very, very confusing. Like, if you want to be a golf fan, you have to try and work at it really, really hard. And I think the next 10 in swing five is one of those where it's just like, oh, what is this putt going to mean for his status for next season? That's besides the point. It's a good idea in theory. Can they simplify it? Absolutely. But this is an opportunity that the PGA Tour implemented a couple years ago to make sure you did have a revolving door in these signature events and they weren't just a closed shop. Remember, that was always going to be the criticism of these, that you're just benefiting the top players and you're keeping guys out. And if you're having a good season, there's no way for you to get in. This was the PGA Tour's answer to that. And Chris Rayton, who again, although he didn't close it out, had a good Masters, has had a couple good weeks now in Florida as well as in New Orleans. The system is working. Is it a little complicated? Is it a little convoluted? Is it lacking the simplicity that it probably needs? Absolutely. Did it work on this occasion with Christopher Rayton significantly altering his career trajectory? Absolutely. And that is a win for the PGA Tour. A couple of those players that you mentioned off the top who also had a good weeks, if not leaving a little bit disappointed from Charlotte, Alex Fitzpatrick has to be atop the list, had an expensive last half hour or so, flubbed a pitch on the reachable par 5 15th when he was just left the green, ended up walking off with a par, had a poor tee shot on 7, again, caught his pitch a little bit messily, ends up making a double bogey, ends up dropping just barely inside the top 5. Ricky Fowler, again, continuing to play well in the signature events this season. He has been the poster child for receiving the invitations, the free invitations, Rex, into the signature events. We did not have to talk about that this year because Ricky was in by virtue of finishing in the top 5 of the FedEx Cup points last year. He has now 4 top 10s in the signature events, probably lamenting a little bit. He said he got fooled by the wind on the 72nd hole with his approach, probably needed one more club, ended up finishing just short, ended up making a bogey from a sticky lie as well. But I was very impressed with Ricky and Alex Fitzpatrick, especially after all the, I think, unwarranted criticism that Baby Fitz endured after the Zurich and the 2.5-year exemption that he received.
Yeah, hopefully this will put that to bed. I think you and I addressed it on the podcast that night. Well, the idea that somehow he received this exemption unfairly because his brother was hitting half the shots. Well, that happens every year. I mean, I'm not quite sure why we're going to call Alex out, because essentially anybody that wins that tournament can make the same claim. And as I pointed out, he was probably going to earn his tour card via the DP World Tour anyway. He'd won on that tour. He was playing great golf, continues to play great golf. And I will say, just to kind of circle back around a little bit, when it comes to Ricky Fowler, it is impressive, because you're right. He took advantage of those sponsor exemptions last year and was able to play his way into them this year, so he doesn't have to worry about it. He opened with a 74 this week, and he told me this afternoon, like, he barely was able to stay on the golf course on Thursday. He had a really bad sinus infection, obviously is feeling better now. So when you consider that he did this and had to limp essentially through Thursday, I would look to next week as probably one of those courses where it would fit Ricky's game. I'm not going to be surprised at all if he finds himself back in contention.
Yeah, very, very solid through the bag, which is something that we had not seen from Ricky over the past couple of years. Remember, he won Rocket Mortgage a couple of years ago, completely fell off the face of the earth at the end of 2023 into 2024. At that point, his irons had let him down, but he was a strong putter. Then all of a sudden, his iron play was back, and then his putter, for the first time in his career, let him down. Very, very solid through the bag, and is playing well in the best events of the season. It's great to see Ricky Fowler. Wouldn't it be something, Rex, if Ricky Fowler, after all these years, once all of the attention is finally focused on someone else and all these other young hotshots in golf, if Ricky Fowler earns his maiden major championship victory, why not the way that he's playing right now? Again, I'm with you. Would not surprise if he popped up at all. A little bit disappointing day for Cameron Young, just a single birdie in a round of 74, ended up dropping into joint 10th. Justin Thomas as well, over par in the final round, that a day that was pretty good for scoring, as evidenced by the couple of rounds, like Ludwig Oberg, Rory McIlroy had a good day as well, and Ricky Fowler, JT, fishing just outside the top 10. Let's talk about Rory McIlroy. This is the first time we'd seen Rory since the Masters, and winning there, this was his one and only tune-up ahead of the PGA Championship. What did you see and hear from Rory this week, and how do you feel about him heading into your second major?
Two questions. One, I think there was a little bit of rust. I think that's fair. And when you consider that he has played two events in 7 weeks, you can get the idea that it probably wasn't as sharp as he'd like to be competitively right now. And he admitted as much when you come into the round. I think what we saw Friday afternoon was exciting. We talk about what these events bring to the fans. That's it. When you have a player of that quality that's in full flight, it was fun to be on the broadcast because the announcers were excited. The fans were excited. It was one of those moments that we don't get enough, I would argue, in golf. And then whatever it is that happened on Saturday, I think a little bit of rust. He had a case of the lefts when you hear him explain it. And there was something to it. I had to think about it. It's been a right to left wind all week long on the range at Quail Hollow. And I think the tendency is, I'm sorry, left to right wind.
Left to right wind.
Yeah, yeah. Left to right wind on the range at Quail Hollow all week long. And the tendency is to shut the face down a little. Yes, yes. So, and he was able to fix it, went to the range on Saturday night and had a good finish on Sunday. And I will say this, the other part of your question, looking ahead to next week, and Rory had taken, he went up to Aronimink earlier this week to get a look at the golf course. And by all accounts, it's exactly what he wants. And to that point, last night I was going to a very nice establishment for dinner here in Charlotte, and Justin Rose's caddy, Fooch, was sitting at the bar and we were talking, and I'm like, well, you have to like your guy, Justin Rose. He's won at Aronimink. I believe he finished runner up there once before. So he has a heck of a record on that golf course. And he said, yes, yes. Like, it should be a great golf course. He shot the winning score there twice is what he said to me. And he goes, but Rory's winning. And I had to kind of stop and, well, what are you talking about? And he said, that golf course, and Fooch was up there last week as well, is absolutely perfect for him. As you've pointed out time and time again, it's going to be wet. The fairways are wide. I actually interviewed Kerry Haig, the Chief Championships Officer for the PGA of America last week. The rough's not going to be what they want because it's been a really cold winter up in the Philadelphia area. So what you're talking about now is, I guess you could call it congressional, when he won the U.S. Open. You can keep going down the list. We know of the courses where he's won. I think that's jumping ahead a little bit, but certainly you would think Rory's thinking ahead. He's already got a look at the golf course. He absolutely has to be thinking to himself, yeah, this is for me. This was built for me.
Yeah, I think he got everything that he wanted out of his truest tune-up. If you throw out the Saturday 75, and by any counts, that was an aberration. That was one of the worst scores and worst strokes gained days of Rory McIlroy's career. I believe it was the ninth worst, just from a strokes gained total standpoint. Driving, approaching the green, as well as around the green. Like, very, very poor. But that was an aberration when you look at the way that he played outside of that. And I think I was most encouraged, Rex, by his iron play. Keep in mind, that was what sort of he was allowed to build his advantage at the Masters when he was up by six shots heading into the weekend. It was his iron play. Once again, even with that subpar Saturday, he was fifth in proximity to the hole. Again, absolutely bludgeoning the driver, hitting as far and as straight as possible, led the field in strokes gained off the tee. Everything that I'm seeing and hearing about Aronimink favors the longer hitters. Because as you mentioned, the greens are sort of the defense. They're very, very pocketed from what I remember. They're very, very slopey. A lot of undulation to them. I think you could really envision a scenario in which the PGA of America is tucking a lot of those pins. I do see a lot of forecasts calling for 15, 20 mile an hour gusts, which would be a lot of fun with those types of greens. But if the greens are the main defense, and if the rough is not overly penal, and if, which as I remember, that golf course has a lot of dog legs from left to right and some slope in the fairways, just this is going to be a wing foot redux, potentially. You and I will touch on this in a couple of days when we actually get on the ground there. But if you are able to cut the dog legs and just wail away on it as far as humanly possible, just to get a short iron into your hand to attack what could be very, very tucked hole locations, all of a sudden the Rorys and the Cameron Youngs and the Brysons, distance plays everywhere, but it could potentially be so, significantly so, at Aronimink if that is sort of the setup. Sausage fingers up, which means it is.
And talking with Kerry Haig last week, they've added yardage to that golf course, a little over 100 yards, which isn't a lot, but there isn't a lot of room there for that golf course to grow. But as we've learned, and I think it's pretty clear by now, that doesn't hurt the long hitters. That only helps them. It helps the Rory McIlroys of the world. It's the Brian Harmons who get hurt by that, the guys who are middle of the pack. So I think he would probably be looking at that golf course. Again, it was a long winter. They were hoping for some warm weather going into this week. Maybe you can get a bit of a spark out of the rough, but right now it's set up for a perfect driver's test.
Kim K, Brian Harmon, both catching strays on this Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. I did want to touch on, Rex, something that Rory said. I believe it was after his round on Friday. So we talked about it on Wednesday. It was a little bit curious that Rory was not asked about any of the swirling drama as it relates to the Jon Rahms and the Bryson DeChambeaus and LIV Golf in general, now that the Saudis have announced they're going to be pulling their funding at the end of the 2026 season. But when he talked about some of the players who have already said that they have no intention of coming back to the PGA Tour, and I'm talking about Thomas Peters, I'm talking about Anirban Lahiri, among others, Rory said, quote, "If you want to be the most competitive golfer you can be, this is the place to be," talking about the PGA Tour. "And if you don't want to play here, I think that says something about you." That is a stone cold truth. And Rex, it is also a dagger.
You think he was talking with Thomas Peters or one of those players that you mentioned? You think that's who he was talking to? Because that's not.
No, I don't think he was talking to them. No, talking to them specifically. I'm saying the overall narrative is some of the players who have come out over the past couple of days saying, "Yeah, I really don't have any intention to come back."
That quote is not directed at anyone other than Bryson DeChambeau. Let's be honest about this. That's the player this is directed to. And I'm working on a story. I'll finish it up tomorrow when I get to Philadelphia at the PGA Championship, because Bryson DeChambeau's own words are one of the sort of lines in the sand that he's drawing if he comes back to the PGA Tour, only if, quote, they, players, want me back. Well, the answer to that,
you're going to be waiting a very long time if that's the case, Rex.
Don't ask a question you want to hear the answer to is essentially going to be the lead to my story, because trust me, no one really wants you back. You joined a lawsuit. You've had a lot to say about the PGA Tour over the years. And yes, I think there's a lot of people in Ponte Vedra Beach who have big offices that love the idea that Bryson would come back to the PGA Tour. I think it would make him returning would make it a better product. However, none of the players have much interest in him coming back. So I'm working on that. And I will say we touched on this on the Wednesday podcast, and there had been a bit of a spike in activity on social media. I know you're shocked by this. The idea being that somehow the PGA Tour had told Rory not to address this situation. Nothing could be further from the truth. First and foremost, no one is telling Rory McIlroy what to say or what not.
Can't tell me nothing, Rex, if you're Rory.
And so it was just kind of a confluence of sort of circumstances on Wednesday. There's a lot of reporters who were at the LIV event in Washington, D.C. or in Virginia. And so those would be the normal reporters who would ask. There were a lot of reporters who didn't come to this event because they're going next week to the PGA Championship. There's a reporter here that is kind of pulling double duty. I was outside waiting to do a stand-up interview that was going to run on Golf Central that night. So there really wasn't those reporters in the room that would ask that question. On Friday afternoon, myself and Ron Green Jr., who works for Global Golf Post, lives here in Charlotte, we did have a chance to talk to Rory. He had plenty to say. You're right. That quote is a mic drop. I will also say there were some other ones in there as well. I think the one that stood out to me was, if you can't make LIV Golf work, essentially, with the money that the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia had and poured into it, then you're not quite sure it's going to work at all. So he clearly had things to say.
Again, another truth bomb.
Facts. Absolute facts. And so all of those things, I think, add up to what he had been thinking all along. Again, I think he wanted to be asked about it. I think he had some thoughts and he needed to get it off his chest. I do think the interesting part of this is he opened one of those quotes saying that, "I don't know how many of those players want to come back." And that's probably true. I mean, we have done this experiment before. Of the 70 plus or however many players that we're going to have this conversation about, I don't know there's going to be more than 15 or 20 that A, have a desire to come back, and B, have some sort of avenue to make that happen. And then you start talking about, well, which ones do the PGA Tour want? Because I can tell you right now, there's probably going to be some the PGA Tour is going to be pretty ambivalent about. Just the idea being that, sure, if you want to qualify for the PGA Tour, there's all these avenues. Go have at it. But there's a very narrow list of guys who actually would have any status whatsoever.
Yeah, that was the point of what I was talking about with Anirban Lahiri and a Thomas Peters, who have at least said over the past week or so that they really don't have any intention of coming back to the PGA Tour. But no, it was quite pointed who Rory McIlroy was addressing. And there's really, you mentioned 10 or 15 to 20 players who could potentially be coming back to the PGA Tour. For the PGA Tour, you're circling two guys in particular. It's Jon Rahm, who, as he mentioned, is under contract for the next, quote, several years, with the potential to not seeing many ways out, barring some sort of force majeure with his contract. And of course, Bryson DeChambeau, whose deal is up at the end of 2026, and who said once again last week in Virginia that if he's unwelcome on some tours, unwanted, he could potentially see himself playing on YouTube and just in the major championships. Bryson DeChambeau, by the way, finished quite well in LIV Virginia. shooting 19 under par and finishing third. He also mentioned, Rex, that he'd had some shoulder issues in addition to some wrist issues, which had hampered him in the 2026 season. But Bryson DeChambeau, I would argue, more than Cam Young, more than Scottie Scheffler, more than Roy McIlroy trying to win back-to-back majors, in my opinion, Bryson DeChambeau is the headliner this coming week at the PGA Championship just because of all that is swirling about how he's playing right now as well as his competitive future. What do you think?
I think he's the newsmaker. I think he's the lightning rod. And don't get me wrong. Like, you and I have had this conversation before. You want a Bryson DeChambeau and a Jon Rahm and a Patrick Reed back on the PGA Tour because you want those storylines. You want the players who aren't exactly the darlings. You want the ones that don't wear the white hat all the time. And I'm not trying to make Bryson or John or anyone else a villain, but the fact of the matter is they were iconoclast. They were the type of personalities that like to sort of butt up against convention, butt up against what the traditions were of the game. Certainly that's the definition of what Bryson DeChambeau has done over the course of his career. I would love to have him back. From a storytelling point of view, you and I carry notebooks and talk into microphones for a living. And for us, it's absolutely perfect, but I don't know that the PGA Tour is going to feel as if, oh, we have to get him back. I don't think that's the sentiment here at all. And when you start talking about leverage in negotiations, I can't imagine on any planet where someone would say, yes, Jon Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau have the leverage here, because there's a universe starting next year where they don't have anywhere to play. Now, the DP World Tour is the outlier here, and clearly Jon Rahm came to his agreement with the DP World Tour. But when it comes to the PGA Tour, maybe LIV Golf can't make it work. And so Jon Rahm's going to be relegated to playing the DP World Tour and the major championships. That doesn't sound like an existence he's interested in either.
Yeah, I talked about it with Eamon Lynch last week on Golf Today. If you're the PGA Tour and Bryson DeChambeau is talking in this way, in which he called potential penalties to return to the PGA Tour unfortunate considering what I could do for them, I'd call his bluff and see if he's actually serious about playing YouTube golf and just the major championships. He would be the first of any player to do so. And it's hard to imagine any scenario in which that would work out well for him. Rex, you are trending for the year's second major. You have dropped an iconoclast and a confluence in the last 5 minutes, really peaking for the PGA Championship. Looking forward to getting up there on Monday to Aronimink. We're going to have plenty of coverage. We're going to have the Live From with Rex and Lav newsletter, which is going to be going back out on Thursday. We'll drop a link in the YouTube comment section so you guys can sign up for that. You and I will also be on Live From the PGA Championship. You on the late night edition, me on the pregame show. Who knows what sort of nonsense that AO and I and Paige are going to be blabbering about in the 4 hour window that that we have on Tuesday and Wednesday. But looking forward to getting up to Philly. If you see us, say hello. It's always great to see you guys. We're going to have plenty of content as well on golfchannel.com. So yes, a lot going on with the PGA Championship. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Wednesday for a full preview of the PGA Championship. We'll break down the golf course. We'll break down the biggest storylines. We'll break down our leading contenders for the year's second major. Looking forward to it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys in a couple of days.
But I didn't say rivalry.